It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Go. How do you like the new laptop? It looks just like the old laptop. That's because it's the old laptop. I couldn't keep up the charade any longer. The new laptop's in the other room. I just still haven't gotten all the... I've got to move files from this to it, and I'm not good at that. And okay. I didn't have a thumb drive handy this week. We can't have it without our, you know, special intro and outro and all that.
Yep.
Okay, so you're still Batman. Is this the same Batman hat, or is this a different Batman hat?
This is the one I've been wearing for a while. I've worn several hats over the 7 years we've been doing this.
Yeah. But how many Batman hats?
Two.
All right. It seems more rounded out in the front than I remember.
Oh, okay.
Your silhouette is slightly different.
Huh. I've got plenty of other hats I could wear, but for whatever reason...
You have a lot of hats.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I don't dig them out.
Which is weird, because you're not... If memory serves, I haven't seen the top of your head in quite a while... But you're not at all balding or anything.
No.
You're just have a thing about hats.
Well, I do have a thing about hats, but the reason I wear them is because my hair, will blow around. And it, you know, doesn't matter if there's not a lot of wind blowing in a particular day. If I don't have a hat on, it's going to blow my hair. And... That's fine. Lots of people say, well, it's a big deal. You don't like your hair blowing around. It's not that. It's that my hair is like wire. Once you get it to move, wherever you move it, it will stay there. So I'll walk into a building after being outside, and maybe there was no breeze the whole day except that blew my hair, and my hair is just going to look like the wind is still blowing on it.
I feel like, though, nowadays that would just mean you have a... really fashion forward look. I think that's how the kids wear it these days.
Like so. Like the wind's constantly blowing on it?
Exactly. But then stopped and it's like frozen in place. Like
also though
I do not promise that'll be my only old man rant in this episode.
Also
I'm digging those lately.
I don't know when this started happening because I have lost a little bit of hair. I used to have more of a widow's peak than I have now, but it's receded.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there came a time where if I was outside and I didn't have a hat, where my hair is parted or at the very back, I'd get a sunburn. When I didn't used to get a sunburn on the top of my head. So I have to wear a hat to avoid that on sunny days or in the summer. But mostly I wear hats because if the wind blows even a little bit, well, actually, like I said, it's like wire. It takes a little bit of a gust to get it to move, but when it does, it'll stay that way, and it's really frustrating. So,
are you at all familiar with the movie Fear of a Black Planet?
No.
Or sorry, Fear of a Black Hat. Sorry.
No.
Parody. That was wrong.
No, Fear of a Black Hat. No.
Fear of a Black Hat is a Christopher Guest style mockumentary, and it is following the careers of the group NWH, which is parodying the group NWA, that was a major force in rap music in like the late 80s, early 90s. And NWA stands for N-words, they say, I don't say it, with attitude. So in this mockumentary, it's NWH, which is N-word with hats. And that's their shtick, is that they have hats. And so, like, you never see anybody without their hat. And it's different in, like, every scene. And every once in a while, they'll even screw with you. And, like, they turn away, and when they come back, it's, like, a different hat. So you remind me of that, kind of. Except it's the same one a lot. But I figure you're saving it for the video documentary.
Yeah, I do have a lot of hats, but I don't wear
Yeah, most of the hats serve as a hat stand, from what I've heard.
Kind of. That's kind of the case, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hat Talk. Today's episode, William. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world with the most worst webcam sex show of the year awards for 2014.
Hmm. Didn't know that.
We were a terrible... We weren't on a webcam. There was no sex. There was no video. We're just an audio podcast of two guys. I'm not really sure how we got nominated but we won the most. Several different organizations.
The Loch Ness, the Loch Ness Monster probably nominated. About true or fish. Has Your Talent, I mean.
Yeah.
Has Your Talent probably nominated.
And I mean, it's fair dues, and there was good prize money, so it's fine. But anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 370.
370.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds significant, is not.
It's kind of amazing that, I mean, you know, we're almost the... the middle of April, the year seems to be going fairly quickly. I mean,
yes.
Does it seem like that way?
I've been feeling, which is especially funny because winter has been going fucking slowly.
Well, yeah, I guess.
It's really nice. There's still a chance of snow this weekend.
Yeah, right. There is. Now, I think it's probably mostly in relation to the podcast, though, because there have been lots of times we couldn't get together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, while I'm here and podcasting, I think my brain gets into... let's reckon time by how many times I remember being here podcasting.
Yeah. Like, but so this might have been a 3-hour session.
Yeah. So then it seems short. But if I think of it in reference to almost anything else, it's like, oh yeah, it seems like April or whatever. I think that's the trick for people is it's what, how is your brain choosing to reckon time at the moment you're thinking about it? Like a lot of people, if they're thinking about their kids and how quickly they grew up, it seems like the time went really fast. Mm-hmm. But sometimes if they think, yes, but let me think about how long I've been working at my present job. Wow, it seems like forever. You know, so it kind of depends on what your frame of reference is.
I've heard that one of the nobody's got the definitive answer why everybody seems to have life moves faster as you get older. But the most common theory nowadays is that your brain's thinking in terms of percentage of lifespan.
Mm.
So like when you were 2. And you went to 3, that year was really long because that was half your life lived over again. But now when you go from, 45 to 46, that's 1/45th of your lifespan.
I think another part of it, at least for me personally, is it seemed like it took forever for me to turn 40. Like, the kids in our house didn't seem to grow up fast to me at all. When people said, oh, it'll go so fast, it did not seem to go fast. Most of my life up till I was 40, maybe 45, everything seemed to be, all of the time periods seemed to be exactly what they said, and some of them seemed longer. There was hardly anything that seemed like it went by faster.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's because I've spent a lot of my life working on things happening or waiting for something to happen, but then when you reach a certain age, the next thing to happen, you're not looking forward to it as much. You know what I mean? You're not looking forward to having get your hip replaced. You're not looking forward to... So you do a little more appreciating what has happened and what you have instead of thinking about the future because there's not... There just isn't as much of a future or as good as of a future, I guess, to think about.
I see.
So I think when you're waiting for something to happen or you're working for something to happen, sometimes it can feel like it's taking a long time. But when you're no longer in anticipation for something to happen, it comes a lot quicker than you probably wanted it to.
That's an interesting theory. I like mine as a factor better. But also, you've also now strengthened the theory I already had, which is that you were born a man in his mid-40s. And I feel like this evidence lends itself. So finally, like, you hit 45 or something the next morning, you're like, so that's what I've been waiting for.
Well, I think it explains the kids for me, too, because I think when a lot of people say, well, the kids grow up so fast, I think I also notice those people tend to have an attitude toward their kids of, oh, boy, I love this age that they're at. I wish they could stay this age forever. I never thought, I loved the age they were at, but it always made me think, oh, won't it be so much cooler when they're this age? And won't it be so much cooler when this happens? So
I think this ties into the whole thing of you would never say, oh, I wish I was such and such age again. I think this all
So
ties into your...
So because I was
never
always
looking back in that sense.
Right. So because I always... I think I did appreciate how old they were at the time. I was always looking forward to what they were going to do next. It didn't seem to go very fast. But yeah, now that I've... You know, I'm approaching 50, and I don't have a problem turning 50, but I don't look forward to turning 50 the way I kind of look forward to turning 40. I think I perceive life very differently. Another thing that probably makes time go by a little faster is I have a lot less energy to do stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm, for any given period of time, I'm probably doing a lot fewer stuff than I used to do.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more of me just sort of sitting, kind of being tired, waiting to get my energy back so I'll do something else. And that time doesn't really register in the old memory, right? So in a typical 8-hour day, I might do what used to be, 6 hours worth of stuff. So it's like, it was 8 hours, but it seems like 6 hours. You see what I'm saying? So the differential makes it seem to go faster.
I got to be honest, though, I'm only half focused at this point because you just said doesn't register in the old memory.
Well, it is an old memory. I forget
like
things, too.
Neurological gold rush era. Well, pioneer.
I do forget more things than I used to. I noticed that today. I was thinking about something, and I was kind of going along a certain track. And you know how I go on tangents or whatever. I've always done that. But I've always been able to steer myself back, at least in my personal private thinking. Yeah. And now that's so much harder.
Trish and I have that in spades constantly. One of the, probably 20% of our conversations now consist purely of one of us saying, what was I about to say?
Yeah.
And then the other one listing through the topics we've just discussed. Which may or may not help, because sometimes we were thinking something completely unrelated, and now you're just distracting me again.
Like going through your browser history. Wait,
yeah,
what?
They're like,
what?
We're saying that, and that, and that, and that. And this is, and it totally both ways. Either one of us could do this, and the other one would always react that way. And we lose most of them, I'm not going to lie.
Right.
We lose most
of them. Now, but sometimes I wonder, is it getting older? Because, see, I'm an absent-minded person. That's just something I've had to deal with in my life. But sometimes I wonder, is technology training us to be this way?
I think there is some of that, because I have said many times, and I don't know the full ramifications of this, but my attention span has gone to shit in the last decade or so, and I fully believe that is me embracing all the screens and YouTube and Netflix, which the cool thing about Netflix is you're like, I want to watch a movie, let's find something. And you can start something, and 2 minutes in, you're like, whoa, this was not, never mind. or not even that strong. Yeah. You're just like, oh, I thought this was going to be this kind of movie. I'm not in the mood for that kind of movie.
Then you can just
and you stop and you switch it. Back in the day, if we had to go get the damn rental, it's like, we're going to watch it.
Yep.
We spent the $2.99 on it or
and
whatever.
You put in the effort.
But now I do that constantly. If I'm especially like on a weekend, if I'm staying up to like watch dumb movies or whatever, the first hour is just me going through the catalog and occasionally being like, okay, this will be it, definitely it. And it starts and there's something in like the first 15 seconds that I'm like, no, nah, doesn't feel right. Switch to something.
Well,
else.
It's true. I mean, there was a time where even with Netflix, if we started watching something, we would finish it. I mean, I don't know, as a matter of principle or something, no more. That doesn't happen anymore. If we start watching something, we're not into it, we'll just stop. And I think that's a good thing. Obviously, you're not wasting your time. But on the other hand, we probably got something from watching these other, you know what I mean? A different perspective, different something.
With that power comes the knowledge that you don't have to commit. And also, you start believing, like, if I know 15 minutes in that I don't want to watch this movie right now, if I believe that's true... Mm-hmm. And that happens a few times, I quickly start to think, 15 minutes will tell me everything. So if 15 minutes is boring,
right,
this
right.
movie sucks.
Right, right.
Regardless of the movie.
Which might not be a fair way to approach it.
In so many ways.
Yeah, right.
But you start to associate, like, I can tell from this little amount of time, and then that turns into this little amount of time. And even, oh my God, I love this and hate this. Again, YouTube is so full. All of these shows that have, like, sections, so like the Daily Show type shows, and they have like three acts
mm-hmm.
that aren't necessarily related,
right?
The panel shows that I watch that have like they spend 2 or 3 minutes on one topic or whatever,
mm-hmm.
YouTube is full of people illegally putting them up there, but YouTube is also full of the actual creators putting them up just in those chunks.
Yep
And that's awesome. And like, if you don't get cable, you could still watch John Oliver. You'd see basically all of each show in those little chunks. But it also means now I'm like, why would I watch a whole episode of something?
Yeah.
I heard just the, I mean, we just did it the other night. Chadwick Boseman, I don't know, the guy who played T'Challa in Black Panther.
I think that's
right. He hosted Saturday Night Live.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did. We didn't watch it. We just waited for the one sketch that the internet couldn't stop raving about. And it was everywhere the next morning. So we watched it, and it was funny. And it was done. By the way, it's T'Challa, King of Wakanda, playing in Black Jeopardy. For those who are familiar with recent years of SNL, you can see how fun that might be. And
yeah,
it was.
That does sound funny. Well, but I wasn't... That's a good point you were making about, say, Netflix and YouTube and stuff. But I'm also thinking of, like, Wikipedia, where, first of all, to have a question about something and just to go there. And without using it, just... I mean...
It's a slippery slope. That's the problem.
You
I always go there for, like, my comic book information.
Yeah. But it's... You know, in your mind, you're telling yourself... And you know, since I write stuff, I actually put this into practice. But casually, I'll often go there, get a piece of information, and I won't even follow it up. I won't
go
deeper. It'll just be Wikipedia. So that's problem number one, is going there for quick information and leaving. But I think even worse is going there, clicking on a link in the article, you know what I'm saying? And you just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into it. And before long, you're like, wait a minute, what was the first thing I even looked up?
Yeah.
So it's kind of training your brain to go off on tangents more often than it might already be prone
to. Which, again, is awesome and terrible at the same time.
Right.
Oh, my God. You still haven't watched any Atlanta?
No, I haven't.
The show is continuing to be amazing. And I can't tell you why what we were talking about reminds me of this, because it would give things away. But they recently had a fairly long episode that was focused on just one of the main characters that... It was like its own short film, and it was really amazing. It reminded me... They also had a thing... last season, where there was an entire episode that was just an episode of a television show that airs in Atlanta, like a local show, complete with the commercials for that network and everything. And one of our characters was a guest on that show. But it's amazing. And there's so many things, it has so many fascinating things about it that I can't tell you until you see. It has sort of weird twists and stuff that, like, it's more interesting if you don't notice it, and then you can go back and see it again. But I'm babbling. My point is, Atlanta is still an amazing show. I highly recommend it to everyone. I especially recommend it to people who are like me and William and are like, you know what? We don't hang around with a lot of Black people, and maybe this is a not unknown but and not complete, but sort of blind spot in our cultural awareness. And... I mean, don't get me wrong, I could be completely being fooled by this show. But it feels right, and what other people who would know are saying is that it's capturing something. While also being a crazy comedy. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And it definitely escapes the bonds of reality sometimes, but not in those terms. It's fantastical at times.
Yeah.
So I would highly, highly recommend it. So, for those of you just joining us, this is nothing like what the show is like at all. We have a hat. It's magic. in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, people who listen, people who enjoy, people who can appreciate a 7-year podcast that's just like Seinfeld if nobody watched.
That's exactly what it is.
Those kind of people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. It's evenly matched servants, draw the note cards out of the hat randomly, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. Before I forget, the thing about Seinfeld, if nobody watched, Trish sent me a thing. So, I think I've spoken before, I watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Not regularly, but I binged a bunch of it, and I've basically seen the whole series. And it's a hilarious show. And I always feel weird about it, though, because you know how I am about needing sympathy? And this show, the whole point is that these are, like, the worst people anywhere. And it's... There are times, I get this with South Park, too, that I'm like, how far can you push irony?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of... And I do sort of worry about that kind of thing. And then Trish sent me a thing. Glenn Howerton, who's one of the main actors on it, who may have left the show. He just got a new show on NBC called AP Bio. So his character may not really be in the next season so much. He was talking about his character and how people think his character's cool. He's like, no, he's literally a sociopath. That's what we're trying to express in the show. It pisses me off because these people exist everywhere. And he said, Dennis Reynolds, which is the character's name, Donald Trump is Dennis Reynolds if he succeeded. Dennis Reynolds is what Donald Trump looks like if he hadn't succeeded. And he was, there was a lot of sort of vitriol in it, and that made me feel a little better again.
Mm.
I'm like, clearly they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So much of that is behind the scenes now for me with so many things. Because it's always the does it make me laugh? And if it offends me, it doesn't make me laugh usually.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. But now there's... I can't separate artist and art very well anymore. Ever. It's bad in particular cases, but I just... it's always niggling in the back of my head. To the degree that, like, even if I don't know... Like, I imagine a scenario where somebody could be doing that comedy for bad reasons or, you know, could be... And so then I start wondering if... I've never heard any sign that this actor is doing that, but suddenly I start to worry about that just because, yeah, there's so many shitheads who have, like, come out of the closet recently.
Mm.
I'm just borrowing that metaphor. I'm not implying that all the shitheads are gay. Although technically there was one shithead who came out of the closet while being a shithead, so I mean, we have to work that out. But
that happens.
That's been a huge blow, Kevin Spacey. I got a sign actually because I dealt with somebody who worked with him when I was in London, and they love to tell stories and stuff. I got a sense that he might kind of be a little bit of a pretentious dick in person. But I'll forgive that. Because, you know, different personalities, whatever.
Sure.
Don't hang on. But then all this, and I'm like, oh, god damn it. Because I worshipped his work. I thought he was one of the most amazing actors. Wow. And I still think he probably is one of the most amazing actors out there.
I remember,
but now I just see him, and I'm like, fuck you.
I remember... when you saw, is it American Beauty? Is that the movie?
Yeah.
Boy, you just went crazy over that.
American Beauty was my favorite movie for many years.
For a long time, yeah.
It is, that's sad. I look at it now and I'm like, oh my God.
Well?
Oh my God. Like, because, unfortunately, I mean, it hasn't aged well, but also, I know why I felt that way.
Oh.
And so I know what it says about me now.
Mm.
And I'm like, what the fuck, man?
I just thought you liked it.
There was a lot. No, I loved it. I thought it was the most perfect, like, all of that. It. And it has not aged well, and
I remember seeing it after you told me that, and I wasn't I mean, I thought it was okay. You liked, if I recall, didn't you like Garden State quite a bit?
Yes.
Okay, and that was another film I saw. I was like, well, that's okay. I didn't know why you loved it, and I just was lukewarm about it.
That one hasn't aged well, and I'm fine with that. Like, it happened. I was caught up in the moment. I was the age of that character. And, you know, I used to dream of having a manic pixie dream girl to come save me from everything. Oh. And that trope was kind of cool, and yeah, I mean, and the music convinced you of things, you know. It was good music.
Well, Natalie Portman was a pretty good manic pixie dream girl.
Yes, she was.
I mean, overall, I'm just saying. I mean, as much of a trope as that
and
is.
And also, for a while, I thought Zach Braff was a really cool guy and who I would want to be if I was a shot in Hollywood. And I'll own that, and I understand why I felt that way, but I'm still like, ugh. Yeah. And yeah, I ended up not watching any of his other films, which apparently none of them have done super well. But, and that was a hell of a cast.
Yeah, it was.
There was a Sarsgaard in there. Ian Holm was in there.
It was a perfectly good movie.
Then
I liked it.
Unknown Jim Parsons was the dude in the armor that was dating the guy's mom. Mm. That's why you don't know, because he had the armor on. Yeah. But yeah, that was Jim Parsons.
The only thing I remember about American Beauty when I finally saw it was, and I don't remember anything about it at all, except there were parts of it that I found a little bit disturbing, personally, but I mean, not like I wasn't offended by them.
Yeah.
But I mean, I walked away from the film thinking that was very well made, and Spacey did a good job, whatever. So I could see, you know, why you
liked it. It was very well performed and very well shot. It was some pretentious male bullshit is okay. What it kind of comes
maybe,
down
maybe that's
to.
What it was. I don't know.
It was very dude bro new agey, like in ways that bug me now. And and you were supposed to find the main character, who's objectively terrible in many, many ways, both before the movie and during the movie, was supposed to be our hero.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was an interesting character study kind of thing. I never really connected with him.
And that's its message is only thing that hurts it. As a piece of film craft, it's still amazing.
Yeah.
It's the story is pretentious and pedantic and so far up its own butt.
Yeah, I don't even remember any of that.
But you know, it was still gorgeously made.
Well, and Spacey he's not going to be in the House of Cards anymore.
Yep. Of course, we stopped watching that a couple seasons
but
ago.
But man, I mean, his performance in there is just, it's just good. I mean,
there's a lot of stuff by him that I just love. And
so, yeah, that's the thing. How was
your week?
I was going to ask you how your week was. You probably have interesting things to talk about. I mean,
I was mostly sick.
Oh, yeah.
I got what I thought was food poisoning. Today I'm finding out some other people at work are similar, and it's looking like maybe it was just a very like short-term bug.
I see.
But it had similar effects to food poisoning. I'll leave it there.
I did see something that maybe I should mention.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen a lot of we saw The Shape of Water weeks ago, and I never talked about it because I didn't feel like I had anything interesting to say about it.
Really?
And
earned Best Picture this year?
Yeah, a few other things that I don't remember. But the thing I saw that I probably should mention is we saw...
what was I talking about?
Yeah. We saw Assassin's Creed.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh!
So I figured I should mention that.
You should. I'm very curious.
Okay, so...
There's something wrong here that I'm like, yeah, we can skip Shape of Water. I still haven't seen it, but that's fine. But I'm like, oh, Assassin's Creed.
Well,
the movie that in no way can't be shitty that I still haven't seen. Tell me more.
I am curious
but
to
I
know what
know.
You think of Shape of Water when you see it.
That's one of those movies that I absolutely want to see. I just never want to see now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have
that's
anything.
It's one of those movies that I'm like, I want to see it. It also feels like work.
Yeah, we basically saw it because of everyone talking about it. Well, and we do like Guillermo del Toro mostly.
I love del Toro, but that's the thing. I don't trust romances anymore. Everybody has made a shitty romance, and especially if it's a paranormal romance. Yeah, and that's what this was.
Yeah, it's just not...
I'm like, I know we're making it into other things, but it's basically that.
But so we saw it, and there wasn't really anything for me to say about it. But the only reason I have anything to say about Assassin's Creed is because you're such a fan of the video game.
Mm-hmm. Second favorite series.
So I go into this film thinking...
For the story specifically, like even.
Yeah, I go into this film thinking, well, this is going to be terrible because everyone says it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was terrible. I think it didn't do a very good job of hooking you into the story, which I find it's true of a lot of video game movies, and I don't understand why this is. It's almost like an aesthetic now, where in a video game movie, things happen, and they just happen. You know, they don't feel any obligation to explain to you why they're happening.
Back in the day, at least in my mind, a video game movie, if it wasn't just a random cash-in, basically was a movie that was the plot of the video game.
Yeah.
And they seem to avoid that nowadays. They'll borrow from it and stuff. But from what I thought originally Assassin's Creed, it's definitely a very different iteration of it, but it was sort of telling the story that happened in the beginning of the game, just with a different character. But then when I learned more about it, it doesn't seem like that was the thing at all.
The one problem with it is the same problem I have with the video game, which is I don't understand...
DNA-based memory is dumb as shit.
Well, before I saw it, I was actually imagining a lot of ways they could have made that cool, and of course they didn't do any of that. They
you mean clamping you around the waist and flinging you around the room wasn't cool?
Well, not just the fact that, you know, when he first experienced it and he asked what it is and she said, genetic memory, done. Not gonna talk about how that might work, nice. How the machine might work, genetic memory, boom, you're done. I mean, you could have missed it. You could have been sitting the whole film wondering what the heck's going on because you missed her just
saying.
People
assume it's a defined enough trope now that everybody's like, yeah.
Well, anyway.
That is terrible. They do about it better in the game.
But that's not the worst part. The worst part is you wonder why they need that in the story at all. Why not just... The main part of the memory was taking place in 1492 in Spain.
Okay.
Why not just tell that story? Why does there have to be a modern-day descendant going back at all? Why just tell the story about what's going on in 1492?
I don't know. That's how it started.
But what's the point of having that part of the story?
Oh, did they not talk to you about the assassins versus the Templars and any of that?
No,
stuff?
They did. But
and the pieces of Eden and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But why not just tell the story of what happened in 1492, and then maybe tell. In the sequels, go 100 years later or something. Why does it have to be, okay, we're set in today, and someone goes back into their genetic memory to do it? Why do you have...
I don't know. They just like telling the story within the story, because there's also been an elaborate, overarching modern-day story
as
well.
So there's a story up there that matters.
Yeah.
In the movie, there's no such thing. It's just this weird add-on that you're like, why did they even put
this in
here?
In the first game,
yeah,
which in theory, if anything's going to parallel, it'll be this.
Right.
This random guy is kidnapped by this company and stuck into a machine where he has to relive this old memory because they're looking for
something. That's what happens in the film, too.
Right. And you find out his family are assassins.
Right.
And he ran away
from
them. All right. So that's all good. And they want to find it now.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know that. You don't know anything about Pieces of Eden or anything like that outside of it because you're a prisoner.
Sure.
And you're getting clues. There's a little bit of an outside game. You get clues about a prisoner that was there before you.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
And so that kind of becomes fun. But eventually, at the end, something really weird happens in... You're in, like, the Crusades.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the Piece of Eden and, like, holographic things start coming out. And you're like, holy shit! I did not know about this.
Mm-hmm.
And all the people are like, holy shit, and they just leave you stuck in the cell and they run off.
Mm.
Second game takes off, like, literally right from there, and somebody's breaking you out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, to find something, and that's always the thing, we have to learn about this, so we have to go into this story that does it, and now you're going to play a different guy.
I see.
But at the end of that second game, I'm not going to give this away, things change a lot. I can explain it to you off the air.
Okay.
Because you're never going to play them. But
no,
things... things change, like, what's happening in the present day changes. Arguably, the genre of the video game slightly changes. You learn some new shit that nobody knew before, and now there's this entire other dimension to the whole thing.
Well, in the film, that all of that just seemed like, why are we bothering with all of this modern stuff? Let's just tell the story in the old time, and it would have been interesting and fun, and maybe it would have been successful. I don't know.
And it's also in the series of video games. This technology has gotten better and better, and the bad guys, although I think I've said before, they do an entire video game pointing out that they're not necessarily the bad guys. They're just on different sides of an ideological view.
Right.
Sometimes they're not. But the people who aren't the assassins have commercialized it. You can buy a video game thing now and play through these. And so they're phasing out a lot of the story, the outside story, because they're getting lazy about it and they don't know where to take it. In fact, they're finishing it off in comic books, I think. But so a lot of these current ones are basically the video game player is in the role of someone who purchased that video game, and you're playing through it, but then something glitchy happens or whatever, and an assassin shows up and, like, needs your help. Or there was one where all it was there was a guy who would show up and tell you, that's not actually how that happened, and show you the scene again. And that became a thing, because as they could commercialize it, they could edit it. And so
that's kind of interesting.
It is an interesting thing that they've played around with there. The problem is they don't have anywhere to go, so it's like the last three or four video games, the outer plot has been the same kind of thing. We do play with it some. There was one game I played, and then the next game I played was a year later in the same setting, modern day, but I was a different person. So as the person who'd played both games, I got to see how things had changed since I was gone. And some of them, it's like, oh, why is that different? I wonder. And was there a little mystery there and stuff like that? But yeah. They couldn't fit that into a movie. Their best bet would have been to do something that hewed so close so that it ends with a big reveal or cliffhanger, because that's how you keep them going in the games. I'm like, well, crap! Now that I know that, I gotta go again.
But I didn't think it was terrible. I could kind of understand why it didn't do well in the box office, but
I think it hit both gamers and non-gamers wrong from different directions.
Okay.
It was unapproachable to non-gamers, and it was way too sacrilegiously different for the gamers.
Yeah, that's my guess. I can see that.
Which is why I feel like I can watch it, because I'm going in saying, you've clearly fucked with my IP.
I thought Michael Fassbender was great in it.
Well, I think it's a thing like, I liked the movie Constantine quite a lot. Later, I read the Hellblazer comics, and I understand why people don't like the movie Constantine. And so nowadays, I say, it's a good movie. It's a terrible
adaptation.
John Constantine movie.
Yeah.
But it's a good movie by itself.
Right. No, I mean, if you like Michael Fassbender, you're going to like...
And I do like
Michael think you're going to like just seeing him in it, because he's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody else in it that's really remarkable, but he's good. It's fun to watch him do his thing. The story was pretty fascinating, at least at first. I thought, you know, if I can think of some interesting things they could do with this whole genetic memory thing, because I knew it was coming because of the game. And then they didn't. And then that's the first disappointment I had. But then I thought, oh, well, maybe it'll still be cool. And there were still cool things about it.
Yeah.
But then the story just sort of dissolved and broke down. And Jeremy Irons was in it. He was fine.
That can be put under the criticism for any movie made in the last 20 years. Jeremy Irons was in it.
And he was fine. I did kind of like they didn't flesh it out much, but just the general tone and design aesthetic in on both the Templar side and the Assassin side.
Oh, nice.
Was interesting. I
don't know how much that adhered to it, too. So much of the series is based around it being good for a video game. Because, like, it clears a lot of ludonarrative dissonance there. Because you're literally playing a video game, essentially. And I remember, like, in one, the person who handles all the stuff in there was talking about, we had a new version of the Animus, and here's what all the new features, and it was the new features of the video game.
Right.
So that kind of stuff was really cool.
Oh, that's clever.
They'd play with that. Well, and in the game, you never die in the game.
Right.
You desynchronize. Right. Basically, if you do anything that was too far off from what the actual person did, then the DNA memory can't figure it out, and you go...
That's very clever. Yeah, so see, that makes sense
There are a lot of things tied into genetic memory, and like side effects for using it too much, and things that can happen, and people who get trapped in the machine.
Well, see, what I thought would be interesting is if they said, you know, we're born with a certain set of genetics, but then epigenetics changes our genetic code, you know, quite a bit before we die.
Mm-hmm.
And if they just made up some pseudoscience thing about how someone discovered that this was actually encoding information.
Yeah.
And if you use a supercomputer and you use the human brain as a subprocessor, you can actually see the memories reconstructed of these people. Except, of course, if you're going to do it that way, the person who is hooked up has to experience the memories. And you use that to see them or something like that. That would have been interesting or
cool.
And
they paid some sort of lip service like
that. Yeah. That would have been fun.
And later in the series, they do an explanation for why things change. Like, the start of the series is all the same protagonist,
mm-hmm.
and then later it's a variety of different ones. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean in history, I mean in the modern day.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come up with more pseudoscientific reasons why they can do that now.
Mm-hmm.
We're running low on time. We still have to answer your question. And I also saw a movie I wanted to talk about. Oh, okay. About, so, I saw Ready Player One.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we haven't seen it yet.
I've seen a couple other movies. I was just at homesick, so I watched a bunch of dumb movies. But I don't think I'm going to talk about any of them. But I did see Ready Player One. It is the anti-Watchmen.
I don't even know what that means.
Watchmen, if you'll recall, was, with one very noticeable exception, almost slavishly loyal to the source material. Like, it was exactly the way it went in the source material. Like, they worked really hard to do that and somehow missed the whole point of the source material.
Okay.
This changes a lot of things. Some of them updated, some of them because it's a movie, some of them I assume artistic or occasionally contractual choice, some of them I don't understand why, but it changes a lot of stuff about the plot, but still gets the point.
Mm, that's good.
And I was very pleased. It shouldn't be too much of a surprise, the author of the book co-wrote the screenplay, so
okay.
That helps. And it's a lot of things were drastically changed to modernize it, and I don't just mean references. I think the message of the movie is somewhat different than the message of the book, but I think it is the evolved version.
Mm.
It hits on aspects of social media and social interaction that we weren't necessarily discussing back then, and now we sort of are.
Mm.
It's gorgeous. Everybody's talking about, oh yeah, it's nostalgia and there's all these references. There were a lot of them, but at no point did it feel gratuitous or in the way, like, I expected more. I expected more trademarks.
Not like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Where that seems to be the whole...
Well, yes, but imagine that Stranger Things was just The Matrix and it was specifically designed for all of those references. Then you'd be like, that's a normal amount.
Yeah, right.
So that's basically what this is, yeah. And I mean, they updated some. They've got references that were not made in the original that are newer or whatever. But they keep a lot of the old ones that I like. The female lead managed to be both more empowered and less empowered, in my opinion. Mm. She does a lot more in the movie. The original's first person narration. It is the story of this one guy and things that happen with him. This doesn't have that at all, so we can jump around to other people and places and things. And also, some of the things that happened to him now happen to her.
Mm-hmm. That's a typical thing to do when you want to have a stronger female character or a more interesting female character.
And it was fun to see her doing more stuff, but then, yeah, there was also a lot of stuff I feel like they took away from her in how they changed her story and stuff. I think I'm just absolutely in love with that actress at this point.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
But everybody in it did very well. And yeah, the book is better. There's no question. The book is better. It's just longer. I mean, there's some really fascinating plot in the middle. There's a lot of stuff in this that if you look at it, you're like, that's a weird coincidence. It wasn't a coincidence in the first one. Mm. We went there the long way. Like, in this one, all of the major protagonists are already friends and end up living really close to each other. And in the original, like, some of them don't ever meet each other except in the course of the book, and don't meet in real life till like the very end, and it's all occur over the world, and so they truncated a lot of stuff for that. But yeah, it's good. It's a really impressively looking movie. Like, it's another one of those I'm like, maybe I should have done 3D, because it's very visually cool, and it's got the vibe. If you can bear for your plot to be different and you read the book, go see it. And if you didn't read the book, go see it, and then afterwards read the book. Book is better, but it was really good. I was very pleased. And it's not going to have a sequel, I don't think. It never did. And instead, they just optioned off his second book, which is unfortunate, because apparently his second book sucks.
Okay.
But yeah, it's not a story that could easily have a sequel, or like, I don't think he'll ever write one. So I'm pleased about that. I'm like, hey, it's just a movie that is good. I mean, in 30 years somebody will want to do something, I'm sure. But we should probably draw a thing out of the thing. You do that while I see who texted me during gaming. This isn't gaming, this is podcasting. Oh, I'm so tired. This is my first day back at work, and I was at work all day, so I'm just exhausted.
Craig wants to know, what's the cutest baby animal?
Ooh.
Human. That's the cutest.
Yeah, you don't care about other baby animals.
Not really. Not really.
All right, just because this will be a boring conversation if we don't, let's take humans off the table.
They're all the same to me.
Literally, every single baby animal is of equal cuteness.
Pretty much.
I don't know that I believe that. You understand what cuteness is, yes?
I don't know. I probably do.
You have a personal definition for cuteness? I assume you have used the word. Well, you used it here. You're saying humans are the cutest.
Well.
So clearly you have some definition.
It's not sure.
All right.
I mean, I've got something to work with, I guess.
And in your mind, like a kitten and a baby alligator are of equal cuteness.
Baby alligators are nice. I mean,
I didn't say equal niceness. I said cuteness.
But I...
No, baby alligators are pretty fucking rad. That's not what I'm talking about.
I mean, when I hear other people use this...
He doesn't
want
to offend the alligator.
When I hear other people use this terminology, it sounds like they mean something they would want to get closer to, or to hold, or to cuddle.
Is that what you mean when you use the word cute?
No.
Then there's not going to be the assumption of that here, because it's your word.
Oh, cute. Sure.
Now that you've specified.
Now it's my word.
I said, all right, your definition.
I know,
of cute.
But okay, I'm not getting into that. Cute. All right, fine.
No, we all know that you're dead inside and don't want to cuddle any of them. You guys should see the various ways he has to get a cat off his chair when he comes in.
Cute.
It's always, like, one of these days he's going to take a spray bottle and try and scrub it off. Like, it's always like, oh, let's get that gross thing off of there.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think is the cutest baby animal?
This is a very tough question.
It is?
For me, yeah.
Because you like baby goats.
There's a lot of cute animals. This is not to say that none of these are cute, but the cutest to me definitely lies in the mammal division. I don't know what the taxonomy is at that level.
It's family, isn't
platoon?
It
platoon I was going to say family, but I feel like that's too far out, because I'm not even in primates here. I'm just in mammals. Hmm. But maybe.
Kingdom? No, that's like plants and animals. Kingdom. I don't know.
I think it's platoon.
It's not platoon.
The
battalion?
Yes.
The battalion of mammals.
The mammal battalion. And the kitty platoon. Kitty platoon, that sounds adorable. Little tiny chibi grenades. Yeah, I mean, the other thing, our cute baby turtles, super cute. Okay, there are a lot of non-cute ones. There are also other, like, most rodents, when they are babies, I don't find that cute. Like, when they look like
hairless
they were... Yeah, like they were an organ in something else a minute ago. Like, that's not cute to me. Mm. Kittens are up there. Cats in general. Like, big cats also. Like, a baby tiger or something. Also super cute.
Bears.
Bears, baby bears. Well, and this is... Oh, and my brain keeps going back to this.
But goats. I thought you liked baby goats.
I do love baby goats. But I think, gun to my head, I have to pick one. A baby panda. Not red panda. Panda bear. Black and white panda. And... not when we say baby, frequently we mean like toddler, because again, a lot of things,
not like newborn baby.
Exactly, a newborn panda is still kind of cute in a way, but I mean, no, like once they're fully fuzzed,
even newborn kittens don't look like kittens that people imagine.
Yeah. So we're talking toddler age, but
yeah.
I think that's the panda's thing. I think we have to give it to the panda. Because they're pretty cute. And I wouldn't want to get too close, because I think it might hurt. But they have.
But what about bunnies?
Bunnies are good. Bunnies are good. And then you can get into weird other...
Little
chicks are also good.
Chicks, yep.
Little baby chicks.
Little ducklings.
Oh, yeah. And then what, like... It doesn't work as well. I was going to say, like... baby sloths, but I've seen baby sloths. They freak me out a little bit. little H.R. Geiger at that point.
But I mean,
baby foxes.
I hate spiders.
Yeah.
But if I see a really small one,
Have you seen this Lucas the Spider thing on YouTube?
No.
People, is this weird CGI? Like, it's a cute spider. And, like, people I know who are terrified of pictures of spiders are okay with this. I'm still freaked out. I'm still, like, it still has 8 eyes. And, it's freaking me out. Sorry, I don't watch those videos.
I don't like spiders.
But there is, I think it's Lucas the Tarantula or something. And it's just a little cute, like, CGI spider.
Hmm. I don't know. I'm probably most entertained if I'm shown... baby animals, like in a video.
Yeah.
I can say I would probably be most entertained watching kittens. More than say puppies or anything else or rabbits. I think kittens would entertain me the most just to watch them play around. I don't know if that's because they're cuter or I just.
Have you ever watched baby pandas play around?
Sure.
That's pretty cute.
And other types of bears.
Yeah. I have been. Trying to grasp recently how alien the minds of our animals are compared to us. Like, the number of things we assume. Trish and I anthropomorphize them constantly because it's fun.
Sure.
So we talk about, like, when one kitty was clearly planning a trap for another one. And I'm like, that's not really a thing. Like... I mean, they were playing, and the other one they heard, and they were like, oh, we're going to pound somebody, but it was not like, because he's my brother, I'm going to do it, you know, that kind of thing. But so lately, I wonder, like, if one of the cats, so here's a not unheard of move. One of our cats is sleeping on the pillow we have in the middle of our bed that basically the cats sleep on, and another one comes and wants that one's spot, so they basically get in and wiggle around and cause trouble until the other one leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the other one stays, and they just sort of snuggle up together. But frequently, the other one seems annoyed enough that they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm willing to give annoyed. I feel like that's a clear thing. Mm. You bug them, they're like, rawr, rawr, and then they finally leave. That's annoyed. But now I'm like, is there resentment?
Can a grudge?
But I mean, no, and I don't even mean like I'll get you one day. I mean the simple fact of like 5 seconds later, is that cat just like, I wish I still had that spot.
Oh.
And the next time I see that cat stole my spot. Or is that like, oh, I wish I could have this. I can't. All right, new place. Or does it vary? Because it varies with people.
Sure.
To a degree. If you come and stand on me, regardless of temperament, and make me move, I might be a little resentful. But I mean, yeah, in general. But I'm like, can we put that on a cat? That's what happened?
I generally think of animals as just, and some humans operate like this too, but animals basically are just constantly sort of rolling down to the place of equilibrium and least resistance. So, you know, whether or not that cat stays there or fights or moves, it's all a calculation in its brain about, you know, what's the easiest, what's the least, lowest energy thing to do here. And probably the cat has another place in mind that to our mind it would be, well, this place is just as good if I go here, so why should I stay here and be annoyed? And just does it, and that's it, you know. Without all that reflection, obviously. But you see what I'm saying?
There's so much I have to learn from them. I always thought the laziest thing was just to lay there. But no. Sometimes moving and relinquishing the spot can be the laziest choice of all.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Dude, you have mind blown. I have to rethink my whole everything I've done up to this
What's
point.
What's especially funny is the look on your face. It's priceless.
Wow. Yeah.
That's good.
I'm gonna have a talk with my cat. See what I can learn. He'll just say, meow.
Well, you know, for cats especially, it seems to me, that when they're motivated to do anything, something significant has to motivate them. And usually it involves hunting, or at least pretending that they're going to do
and
that.
And this is a whole factor in all this. Instinct becomes a thing. There are some things that animals do on instinct, and I understand that, and I'm not claiming that is emotionally based.
But based on my own experience with cats, which actually is pretty extensive because we had a lot of cats on the farm and I watched them a lot, but also we watched this program for a little while where this guy was going to people's houses where they had misbehaving cats.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it was the same thing over and over again. It was like, look, a cat has a process. It does this, and then it does this, and then it does this. If you interrupt that process, it's going to be confused, and it might act out in ways that to try to cope
with
that.
Did this guy have terrible facial hair?
Oh, yeah, I think he did.
Yes. Was his last name Galaxy?
I don't remember that.
Yes. This was my cat from hell.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. But everything he said made sense based on everything I knew about cats. I mean, some of it was a little new agey or whatever, but most of it seemed right on. And from what I can tell about the cats I've known, they all seem to be like this, was, well, and also people who have studied cats have figured a few things out about them. It is that as a species, you know, cats in the wild, big cats in the wild, don't eat very often.
Mm.
So they've really got to, they're not just lazy because they like being lazy. They've got to preserve their energy.
Yeah.
So a cat's life is very much just like I said. It's like you're looking for the path of least resistance and equilibrium, and you hunt, you know, when it's absolutely necessary to hunt, and your senses are the most, you know, keen and everything to find what you're looking for. So it's basically sleep, hunt, eat, you know, breed. It's very simple, very straightforward.
And there's so much to teach us.
And their whole psychology, I guess, is built around that. Just around that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're right. It's probably not much more complex than that.
Well, and that's what worries me, because we can learn a lot about animal behavior. But this is my big philosophy. I'm like, but that doesn't tell us necessarily, like, what they're feeling.
No, yeah, that's right.
And I feel like cats have some emotions, because sometimes a cat's pissed off. Sometimes, like, I feel like I can sort of put that together, but again, things like resentment.
Yeah, well.
I don't know.
Well, they have fight or flight, like all animals.
I know
have.
I'm saying this like this is a problem in me building a relationship with my cat or something.
No, it doesn't sound like that.
This is no. I thought I sounded very plaintive in that one. I just don't know what he's feeling. Like, I do want to say I get along great with my cats, and we make up a lot of shit about what they're feeling all the time.
It's obviously not a complex emotional life, though.
I wouldn't think.
I mean, like I said, they have fight or flight, and even those two things have a spectrum. And on the spectrum of fight, you're going to have all kinds of degrees of what would look to us like anger or annoyance or whatever. But really, it's just mildly ready to fight or whatever, you know. And it's just one thing on a kind of a spectrum of, and again, I think cats are reluctant to do anything until they absolutely have to or feel like they actually have to. Because that's just their way to conserve energy between meals. I mean, your cats eat a lot more than cats out
in the
wild.
And my cats, all three of them do very different things.
Yeah,
They have all sorts of idiosyncrasies.
Which constitute a kind of personality.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
I could go on and on about my cats, and it would still probably be one of the better podcasts we did. But we're over time here, so...
Cats are interesting. Cats do interest me more than other animals typically do.
Cute! But I think Baby Panda wins. if you take out human, which I feel like you have to, just for a variety of reasons, out of the equation. That's it for this week, people. I'm going to St. Louis, so I'll have some things to tell you about that.
Oh, that sounds
like
fun.
When I come back. Never really been to St. Louis. I've been to the airport.
I've been to the bus terminal, so yeah, I've never really been there either.
Check it out. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.